This is episode 38 of the IDRA Class Notes Podcast.
If and when the parent outreach worker thinks about outreach, we really have to shift the image, the paradigm, the model. Mm-hmm. It has to be something different. Mm-hmm. Communication requires direct personal contact. If I call you, you'll at least have a brief conversation mm-hmm. with me. Mm-hmm. And those 5 minutes might yield much more results than an hour of preparing a letter and sending it to everybody.
Welcome to the IDRA Class Notes Podcast. I'm Christy Goodman. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and school administrators to better serve all students. We really encourage you to share your thoughts and questions and suggestions. There's details at the end of this podcast on how to contact us. If there's something that you hear today or in a previous episode that you want to ask about, please let us know and we'll answer it on a future show. And if you like our show, we encourage you to tell 3 friends or leave a review for us on iTunes. That helps others find us. We've also set up an email alert to let you know when a new episode of Class Notes is available. If you're not subscribing to this podcast, our email alerts can help you stay up to date. Just go to our website and sign up, and you won't get any other kinds of email from us when you do that. I also want to let you know there's another email. This is a monthly electronic newsletter called Graduation for All. It's free and shares news and resources focusing on graduating all students across the country. Again, you can sign up at our website, and you sign up for this, and that's all you get. And it is for, by the way, for all grades, and we have it available in English and in Spanish. You just select which language you want to receive. Now, our topic today is effective parent outreach with Aurelio Montemayor. You know his voice, I'm sure, if you're a regular listener. Aurelio is IDRA's lead trainer and director of our Parent Information and Resource Center for Texas. He brings extensive experience in working with school personnel, parents, and students. His career in education spans 4 decades and has included teaching at the high school, middle school, and elementary school levels. And I want to let you know he was just elected to the national board of the PTA as a member representative. Is that right? And he received a bachelor's degree in English and philosophy and a master's degree in bilingual education. He's passionate about the power of parent and community engagement for leadership development and effective education. He's a key developer of our model for parent engagement and in helping schools, parents, and community groups rethink how they work together, which is pretty much why we're here today. Mm-hmm. So, hello.
Hi.
Glad you're with us. And let's get started and talk about why effective parent outreach is an important topic for schools.
Well, you know, if anybody has been following our newsletter, especially the last couple of years, I've been writing articles that talk about No Child Left Behind, the parent involvement responsibilities that come from the law, mm-hmm. and within it, highlighting the idea of authentic consultation of parents, of engagement, of dialogue, mm-hmm. you know, saying that parent engagement is more than just getting 30 warm bodies in the room. Mm-hmm. But getting people to the table mm-hmm. is a task.
Right. We often hear, well, yes. you know, I sent out this flyer and people didn't come and
absolutely.
They must not care. And that kind of, I mean, it kind of leads you to that.
And so,
conclusion.
You know, if I'm saying let's have dialogues, that means that there's people to talk,
right.
you know, to
right.
dialogue. And so, you know, and yet, you know, what we see as if I'm a typical Title I outreach worker mm-hmm. on a campus, on a Title I campus, we will mail, if it's a bilingual community, we'll mail bilingual mm-hmm. flyers mm-hmm. home. Mm-hmm. And if the principal has the time and we have the equipment, we'll have a taped message that automatically all the homes are dialed and get this taped message. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is actually minimal outreach. Mm-hmm. And you get the typical results mm-hmm. with somebody saying, well, you know, we sent the flyers, we called them all, and nobody showed up. Mm-hmm. And we keep getting those results. Now, we know that there's also complicating factors in the sense that a Title I outreach worker does many other things.
Right.
And they're assigned many times to do things on a campus that have little to do with the parent outreach. Mm-hmm. But if and when the parent outreach worker thinks about outreach, mm-hmm. We really have to shift the image, the paradigm, the model. Mm-hmm. It has to be something different. Mm-hmm. For one thing, communication requires direct personal contact. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm talking to you. We're seeing each other. We're having a conversation. Imagine that you would mail me these questions, and I would type and mail you the answers. Uh-huh. There's some exchange there, but even that is not the same as this live communication.
Right. I'm looking at you. Don't get to know each other.
Mm-hmm. We're not seeing our facial expression. We're not responding. I'm not responding to what you're saying, and vice versa.
Right.
Now, this is labor intensive.
Yeah, how do you do that with a whole campus?
Okay. I'm talking to you. Mm-hmm. Well, because we usually, first of all, think of the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. I'd rather think of the line of least resistance is, if I call you, you'll at least have a brief conversation mm-hmm. with me. Mm-hmm. And those 5 minutes might yield much more results than an hour of preparing a letter and sending it to everybody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay? The model is more like a community organizer from the Alinsky model that goes house to house and listens to what the needs of the community are. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that that is exactly what the outreach worker should do.
Okay.
But the model is direct communication with families. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's a particular success model that I've heard that is, and I've been through training that tells you, think like the salesman who says it's going to take 10 or 15 calls before I make one sale. So if I do it after 5 or 8, that's already a plus.
Right. After you've called that number
yes.
of people.
Yes. In other words, I've contacted that many. Mm-hmm. So that if I'm thinking, oh, I've done 8. I've got 2 more to do before I get a yes.
Right.
That's a very different feeling and attitude than I've talked to 5 people and nobody wanted to come to the meeting.
Right.
Okay.
Well, what do you talk about in those conversations? And, you know, tell me your deepest, darkest secrets and, you know,
no, we talk about school.
Okay.
You know, it's like, how do you feel about school? How are your kids doing?
Okay.
And look in the conversation for any hook for something. If I'm going to have a meeting and the parent says, well, I didn't like the report card my kid got, I say, come to the meeting. We're going to talk about that.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Or I don't know what this test is all about. Whatever it is, figure out what it is the parent is talking about that in some way overlaps with what we want to do or are going to do.
Okay.
Or maybe I'm just listening to them to think about what will make sense for the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even
mm-hmm.
know. I'll say, I'm going to call you back because we're going to have a meeting, but I'm listening to you and other families to see what our meeting should be about.
Okay.
And again, I'm focusing on setting up a communication network.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I set my goal for each week, and this is early in the school year, I will have personal contact with 5 different families every week. And of those 5 that I contact, I'm looking for a leader. And here's what I mean by a leader.
Okay.
It's kind of, I've gone through some training from some of the neighborhood organizers mm-hmm. training mm-hmm. that they do.
Mm-hmm.
They said, the way we define a leader is a person that can bring other people to the table or to the meeting.
So it's not the person who is the one at the school the most of the time?
No.
And
it's not the super mom, not the volunteer.
Okay.
It could be if they also have the interest and the skill and desire to talk to their peers, to other parents.
Okay.
And to invite them, to engage them. So as I'm talking to families, that's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I want to recruit them to come volunteer, that's great. But what I'm looking for is the leader as one who draws and brings others to the table.
Right. Because there's always in a group, there's somebody who's doing that naturally. They're the ones who are connecting people.
And these are the ones that are going to be the labor-intensive ones for me. These are the ones I'm going to do follow-up calls and spend time and nurture because they will produce the results I want, which is to engage more families from that community.
Right.
And also setting up this network of communication among themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I would consider mailings to homes and recorded messages as frosting on the cake. They're minimal and incidental.
Right.
We'll do it to create a kind of an awareness on the community, something's going on, but not expecting that that's what's going to bring people
in. That's not what's going to bring them in.
The quality of the communication with the potential emerging leaders is where the pay dirt is.
Mm-hmm.
When you identify and recruit those individuals who not only communicate with other families, but actually produce results, meaning they brought other people, you nurture and support them, and you help them then look for others like them. And however long it takes, because as those numbers increase of those emerging leaders, then you have a really acceleration of the communication of the numbers. Mm-hmm. Because even if some of the families they talk to don't come to school, they are communicating with families about what is going on in school.
That's true.
So right. You're setting up, see, because the outreach is about setting up a consciousness and a communication among families about what's going on in school, mm-hmm. how we can support academic success, mm-hmm. what support the school needs around that.
So your success isn't measured by how many people come to the meeting anyway?
No.
Okay.
But eventually you would get the numbers.
Right. Okay.
At critical times, mm-hmm. you would get the numbers. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's going to happen 3 to 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you set up and support those kinds of networks,
mm-hmm.
your planning meetings include these live wires.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do for them what they can do for themselves. You know, I might say that, and I've written about it in some cases, about the traditional good parent outreach worker is like a mother hen. It's mm-hmm. a very positive, charismatic person that does a lot of good, and she helps this person connect to Social Security mm-hmm. and this and that, the other, brings them together, takes us on field trips. And at parent conferences, you see them, that parents come in a little cluster and
right.
follow them around.
Right.
Okay. And so there's nothing wrong with that model, but it is not the model we're looking for in terms of the
mm-hmm.
leader
mm-hmm.
who is the outreach worker,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
You want to work yourself out of a job. In other words, you want to have a nodule, a cadre of other parents
right.
who themselves have their own telephone tree, their own network. And you know, this is working in other settings. There's a history of dialogues that's been going on, and they have an online mm-hmm. resource called Everyday Democracy.
Oh, right, where they involve students as well.
They involve students and
mm-hmm.
families.
Mm-hmm.
Their focus is dialogues. But as a result of what they were doing, for example, in Montgomery County, they enlisted Hispanic parents to improve student success. The parents set up a phone bank, and through that work, you had Spanish-speaking parents discuss ways to increase parent involvement. It was parents talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they all agreed on one thing. They want all the children to succeed in school
mm-hmm.
and life. So they found a common basis.
Right.
Once these families find how much they have in common
mm-hmm.
and how important it is, they also see the power of the group,
mm-hmm.
of a network, of numbers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because obviously numbers are important,
mm-hmm.
but qualitative numbers.
You know, it's interesting, you know, I have two daughters, well, one's about to go into public school, but when I go to the PTA meetings at that school, there's 200 people in the room, 200 parents in the room. So I go to those, but don't feel connected.
Right.
You know, and so, but what you're talking about, I'm guessing would change the expectations of parents of the meeting.
Yeah,
you
when
know,
you have
not coming to receive information anymore.
And this is a huge message I have to the PTA network,
mm-hmm.
to those who elected me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I ran for that PTA office, coming in as an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
I was nominated to the board for 2 years, and now I ran.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to run because even though I'm new to PTA, PTA could be a very powerful organization.
Absolutely.
In this model.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do get 200 people into the room, you want to break them into small groups to have dialogues
right.
and discussions.
Right.
You don't want to be just informing them up front and having them vote on things.
And have a program.
The children perform. Or even worse, it's just to fundraise, you know,
right.
because I would rather have those 200 parents organize around having equitable funding for all public schools
right, right.
than to raise $10,000
mm-hmm.
to buy new curtains for a stage
mm-hmm.
or computers. In
mm-hmm.
other words, like, I think that the parent activity, whether it's a middle-class family in a suburb or a poor working-class
mm-hmm.
family in the urban area in the inner city, parents, number one, should come together because they want all kids to succeed and
mm-hmm.
school is about learning
mm-hmm.
and academics.
Mm-hmm.
And parents, whatever their background, can support that.
Right.
And to see each other as peers. Because the other piece that I think is very important is raising children is a difficult and isolated activity for
mm-hmm.
families,
mm-hmm.
especially now that the extended family is no longer part of our general culture.
Right, right.
You don't have aunts and uncles or anybody
that's
around.
Right.
It's just the
mom. Certainly
not your neighborhood. No, it's mom and dad and the kids,
yes,
and that's it.
Yes, yeah.
And so,
if that.
Yeah. All the more reason that our outreach should have families have compassion and support for each other in
mm-hmm.
this difficult
mm-hmm.
job
mm-hmm.
and that school brings them together around the common basis that they have, that they all know how hard it is and they want to support each other it is
mm-hmm.
and what they want is all kids to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And whether I know the language and whether I know the content, I don't have to know chemistry to support my kids to do well in chemistry, whatever it is, that as we come together, these are meaningful conversations. Mm-hmm. We've had that with ESL kids and their parents and counselors and teachers. It's happening all over. But it means that to have these dialogues and that peer support, again, the outreach has to change. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be hard for the institutions and schools to understand that, because sometimes principals want this person on that campus who's a Title I outreach worker to do many other things, whether they be a truant officer to help in the classroom to do other things. Mm-hmm. Because the research shows that meaningful parent involvement will raise student scores, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. we can eventually convince principals that labor-intensive but intelligent outreach mm-hmm. will, in fact, bring families to the table and create a community that is in sync with the school to support academic achievement, mm-hmm. to go to the school board and saying we need better teachers, lower mm-hmm. classroom size. In other words, that community mm-hmm. will then very vocally and assertively defend mm-hmm. this campus to be the best campus mm-hmm. around. Mm-hmm. And so all those things are important, but this, it's like a cornerstone or a pivotal thing. If the point of view of the outreach worker is still in the old paradigm, mm-hmm. they're going to keep working very hard to get this and still not even get 30 warm bodies in the room.
So what if, okay, I'm on board, I'm an outreach worker and I'm on board with this, but I have the expectations of NCLB and the requirements. I have a principal who this concept is totally new to and wants to do things in the traditional way. What do I do then?
Well, first of all, NCLB has some very, very strong and rational requirements mm-hmm. that come from the Title I mandates. Okay. Title I has always been about kids doing well.
Mm-hmm. Kids who are in low-income.
Low-income. The Title I means the families are on free or reduced lunch.
Right.
The kids are, which means they're economically disadvantaged.
Right.
They're in need.
Mm-hmm.
And this is federal support so mm-hmm. that the school helps those kids succeed.
Mm-hmm.
The Title I mandates are focused directly on the academic success of children.
Mm-hmm.
When you bring families together to have conversations about the academic success of children, you are doing what No Child Left Behind wants.
Okay.
No Child Left Behind, in no part of it, says we want more parent volunteers to go on field trips or to raise money for school or anything else.
Okay.
We want the school to communicate clearly with them about how the kids are doing, how the campus is doing. That's those famous report cards.
Right.
AYP mm-hmm. is about how the school is doing in mm-hmm. terms of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Are they doing well? Now, it's focusing on one test, and there's other problems with that.
Right.
But at the same time, the spirit of the law is school and home should be communicating about what will help these kids succeed in math, in reading, in science,
mm-hmm.
and social studies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what I'm talking about, in fact, will help you succeed. Whatever the new Title I law will look like, and we still are going to have a long dialogue and conversation mm-hmm. and debate about that, all the indications are that the parent engagement is going to be ratcheted up.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. I mean,
they're not
it was in this version.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not going to say less. They're not going to say, you know,
mm-hmm.
that wasn't important.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the things criticized, they haven't criticized the fact that schools have to report to families and disaggregate scores, and that data should be meaningful to parents.
Right.
To make data meaningful for parents, we need to bring them in and explain it the way they understand and have them have a conversation.
Right.
Oh, so the children on this campus have these reading scores. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And these math scores.
Mm-hmm.
And why? And why did they do different mm-hmm. in this class than in that class? And what, you know?
And how powerful for parents to know that, well, even though my child isn't succeeding, he or she's not the only one in this category, that the school's actually not doing good with any of kids like mine. And so how can we come together about that instead of, you know, me just coming down harder on my kid?
Exactly. And so that means that we have some information for those that are going to do the staff development to train
mm-hmm.
the teachers to do better.
Right.
If there's any modification, or even if that doesn't change,
mm-hmm.
the school needs to know if the after-school tutoring is working.
Right.
The supplementary education services.
Right.
Are those working?
Mm-hmm.
How are they helping the kids?
Mm-hmm.
Some programs go and actually help the child in the home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that helping?
Mm-hmm.
Ask the students.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's also intergenerational.
Mm-hmm.
that we want to have a conversation among the students, the parents, and the personnel on campus, the teachers, the counselors, and everybody else. Because it also allows teachers to say, well, this is how it looks from my point of view.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. And so all that is a different setting. Right now it's the exception rather than the rule. But if we're going to follow the spirit and the letter of the law with No Child Left Behind, and whatever the son of No Child Left Behind will become, or the next version of it, we're going to need authentic consultation and engagement with families.
And you've seen this work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Our example is... No. We have seen it work in South Texas, in West Texas, in Houston. It works in different ways. We have a very dynamic, small high school in Houston Independent School District. It's actually a public charter school. But it doesn't cream. It doesn't get just kids that are academically
excelling.
And we were working with the parents of the freshmen just in June. We had 130 adults in the room.
Wow.
These are...
In June.
In June. And this is for 90 incoming freshmen. These were 90% Latino.
Okay.
90 and over 80% economically disadvantaged, blue-collar workers, most of them. Many of them are recent immigrants. And we had a conversation about their vision, their goals, about college preparation and what a parent of a freshman has to be aware of. And it was an amazing, they didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
We started the meeting at 6:30, it was 8:30, and we were saying goodnight, and they were still chatting and talking and excited about the coming year. And these were just the freshman parents.
Wow.
You know, and these, you know, this was clearly within the mandate of Title I, the requirements of Title I. But then you had a principal and a faculty that's communicating with families every day in a variety of ways.
But to see that in secondary level, I mean, you see that in kindergarten,
this is a high school. This is a high school.
That's pretty amazing, yeah.
We've had meetings with community organizations where the parents come together and they discuss. They just got a letter from the school that the school was not doing well, So what do? So they go and interview the teachers and they find out what they have to do. There's any number of things we've been doing, but we're a small program. We're working in a large state. What still hasn't happened is that the typical campus, the typical Title I campus, still doesn't understand how to shift outreach to this kind of communication with families. And they don't because they say, well, it's labor intensive and we're not social workers. We can't do all that. Although some outreach workers do become that. And I say, no, you don't become a social worker. You're looking for the emerging leaders, and the emerging parent leaders are those that are going to invite other parents. And you, and that becomes your network. And over time, we've seen in other different venues. In San Antonio, we have the Citizens Organized for Public Service, COPS. It was one of the IAF Alinsky groups. When it started, it was very powerful because in every neighborhood, you had these emerging leaders that were generating a lot of activity, and some neighborhoods got the drainage that they had needed for generations. They got streets
for
paved,
and that kind of
you know, they had police protection. A lot of things happened because the community emerged, and it didn't happen overnight. It happened because certain individuals went around looking for those emerging leaders. Helped them get the information they needed, found where the levers of power were in City Hall, and they went in numbers and had that done. Now, this is not what we're seeking in this outreach that they, you know, but it will require collective action in each campus to make sure that the community joins the school for the result that we're looking, which is...
it's a partnership.
Yes. Children succeeding in school. Happy in school and succeeding in school. Staying in school and succeeding.
Great. Well, thank you so much. This is wonderful. We're going to put some resources on our website, the resources page, so you can see some of the things Aurelio has written and some other resources, the study circles that you were talking about, and make those available to you. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.